It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. As always, presented by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows, whatever exterior and renovations you guys need. Exterior Home Solutions can get that done. You can give them a phone, give them a call by dialing the phone number 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot of questions to get into. We'll start with VolFan23. Any update on Andre Carrick's appeal and eligibility for next football season?
Nothing finalized at this point. So we'll see whenever the NCAA makes a ruling. I mean, if the NCAA wins an appeal, that'll be their first win in a hot minute for sure. So we'll see what happens with that appeal and where that goes from there. But no final resolution that I'm aware of at this point.
We're not calling them the Washington Generals over, but they're pretty much the Washington.
feels that way right now. I mean, they're not winning anything. That's for sure.
Coty MC11, this isn't a criticism, any part of the program. Just curious, rough guess on how many guys are here because they have the best NIL deal.
I mean, there's obviously going to be a few. I don't think anybody's here that just, you know, like doesn't really care for Tennessee, but because Tennessee paid them the most, they're here. Like, I think everybody likes and loves Tennessee, right? Like, no one's just, I mean, like the whole mercenary thing. I mean, that's too true to a degree, but like, I don't think anybody detests Tennessee, but just because they're getting paid the most, they're here to do a job.
Grant, don't you think that scenario that the poster painted falls more in line with a transfer guy who's got 1 year of eligibility left? It's like the kid from Northwestern is like, hey, I'm on a rental program for a year. Like, for those guys, it's probably not as much about – it's probably is more about money if you're a one-year guy who's looking and going, hey, I got to be somewhere 10 months. You know, as opposed to somebody who's in a multi-year, you know, on campus.
I would lean that way. The only kind of difference in my mind is I can't even think of the kid's name, the number one overall player in the 2025 basketball rankings going to BYU because they got so much Marriott money to spend. I mean, they were all in on the Chaz Lanier sweepstakes because they got that Marriott money to spend. Like, that's feels like something different. I think it's always been like, is this really a huge change from the past? Because, you know, a program like Tennessee is always recruited nationally. You're not just recruiting kids that grew up diehard Tennessee fans. Like, part of the allure is, you know, whatever kind of opportunity you have here. I think it's the same thing with NIL opportunities as well. It's just a little bit more off-field to go with the opportunities on the field. But, yeah, the kind of rental, kind of one-year graduate guys, it feels more like maybe that's the case for those guys opposed to just regular recruits and other guys in the portal.
Yeah, but Austin, in this day and age of, you know, free agency every year, I guess somebody could just take the cash and go, hey, I could do this for 11 months and then go wherever I want to go. I'm just going to – the money's so good, I got to cash out and take what I have. I don't think that's the case at Tennessee, but you could certainly see that being a factor around the country.
Yeah, and even then, though, like, I think no matter where you go, you know, most people are happy with their surroundings. Most people aren't going to sit in a surrounding that they don't like. That's why I think, like, sure, like, money plays a factor, but, you know, I don't think anybody is going, you know, I'm not going to go there because I don't really like the place. You know, I don't know. I think it's kind of, I don't know, there's shades of gray to it, I guess, is how I'm trying to say it. I mean, but for the most part, it's, you know, people are picking schools because they still like the school and they got the biggest NIL deal.
I'm here because of the Weigels deal that Hubs got me, and about 75% and then about 25% the staff, the colleagues.
You're here because you get to co-host Game Quest during football season, right?
That's true.
Well, Grant, what you don't know is we just signed Casey's on to an exclusive partnership, so thanks for violating that. We probably just lost the contract.
All right, let's go to I Miss Denarius Moore. Y'all have talked for years now about how the NCAA allowed this mess we have today, unlimited transfers, tampering with players, et cetera, by not getting ahead of the NIL train with some of the regulations or plan in place. So, assuming that they stay out of it, what is your long-term view of where college sports will be in 5 years?
This is a whole podcast all to its own, right?
Yeah.
I think a couple things jump out to me, Grant, and one is – with the new rev share, how accurate, how enforceable is this thing going to be that you have to validate all the NIL deals through the the law firm of whoever, you know, that, that is coming out there. I mean, how stringent is that going to be? How easy is the workaround going to be there? Yeah, whatever it is. I think it's the Heisman Trophy candidate. It's like whatever they use, whatever firm they use, I think is the one. But how enforceable is that going to be for one? And how easy is that going to be to work around? And then two, if there is no real regulation, at some point, is there a natural cap? At some point, do teams go and schools and donor bases go, you know, we're not going past this number? Or is there always going to be one school that's going to be willing to go further? Like, where's that number at? I don't know if that number exists right now.
I think the simple answer is you have no idea what it's going to look like in 5 years. Because, I mean, go back to, what, 2019, 2020, and try to predict what college football is going to look like 5 years from then. Nobody would have even gotten close to it. I think there's no way of even putting an educated guess on what it's going to look like, because nobody has any idea. It's crazy. It's lawlessness. It's, you know, wild, wild west, all that stuff.
I mean, think about Pruitt got in trouble for $50,000-$60,000 that they were able to find. But, I mean, like, now it's like, you know, a guy who's your fourth stringer is making $50,000 or $60,000.
Well, and Eric, think of this. I mean, some Ole Miss people are going, wait a minute, we didn't get the bang for the buck on the amount of money you spent on the roster. While Ohio State fans are going, hey, spend more, win more, is how they feel right now going into the semifinals. You know, so if Ohio State were to win it all, then it furthers the narrative, the more you spend, the greater your chances are of winning. Whereas if, you know, some other places you spend a bunch of money and you didn't get there, okay, is it worth that? That's going to be what's kind of fascinating over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, if the numbers we're hearing out there are actual real numbers and those are accurate. I don't think anybody knows exactly what everybody's number really is, because, you know, there's a lot of speculation on what numbers are, but I don't know anybody knows the true number for everybody. Yes,
correct. I mean, like some of the numbers, like Georgia, you know, was floated out there as a top four, top five spender, and they're not. That's the funny thing, is like they're not in the top four, top five. Like some of these numbers that people put out there are just wrong.
And so I think, like, it's also interesting, going back to what you said initially, Brent, you know, with this rev share. You know, Ohio State, you know, depending on what that rev share is, you know, 20 or 22, whatever it is, I mean, they're spending more on that reportedly on their roster right now. So how many of those NIL deals can be validated, you know, through the proper channels in order to still be the biggest spender? I just think that's going to be really, really, I'm curious to see how all that plays out, because the rev share total is going to be less than what they're spending now. And then who else can keep pace with it? And, you know, you look at Ole Miss. Ole Miss certainly didn't have a bad season this year, but didn't make the playoffs. And Ole Miss's strategy is certainly to go all into the portal, whereas other programs are more through the high school ranks and supplemental through the portal. So I'm intrigued. I just remember back in 2020, I thought the craziest thing in the world was that they were giving everybody another year. And then now, like 4 years later, 5 years later, that's like not even the biggest deal.
You can play until you're 29 if you want now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, John Campbell played his 7th college season this past year. I mean, that's just wild. Another question here from the poster. Also unrelated thoughts on Farouk. Did Tennessee get a steal with Farouk?
I mean, I think we still got to see more, but I think that they like what they've seen out of him. Super athletic, hard hitter. Still got to see more. But, yeah, potentially, no doubt, could be very much a steal.
Nashville 615, which wide receivers get the most snaps in the slot this fall? I think Braylon Staley's a given in terms of a slot receiver. We'll see what else they do in the room right there. But of the guys, Austin, Joakim Dotson's kind of more of an inside guy. I'm sure they can, you know, be versatile with the other guys they have. But who are some of these slot receivers?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do with Amari Jefferson. Where do they put him? But, you know, you get the nail on the head with the first two. And then, you know, what else do they add to that room between now and then?
What is your confidence level 1 through 10 that the offensive line is better in 2025 than it was in 2024, Grant?
6.78. Because, I mean, I don't know. I had no idea what the defensive backfield was going to look like a year ago.
And this one's interesting, Grant, because, like, you're going to, in all likelihood, have a true freshman, a right tackle, okay? Let's say Andre does not win his eligibility. Let's say there's two new guards and a new center. one of those being a transfer. You've got a left tackle on Lance Hurd that's a year into the system. You feel like he's going to be better. There's just so much unknown right now, right? So, like, and again, for as bad as they were at pass pro with the sack rate and all that, again, they still block for a guy that ran for program records and second most rushing yards in program history. So
I think for me, the confidence level goes to what's the center look like, the center situation look like moving forward. How good is the center? How much confidence do you have in that that position specifically? Because that position means so much to the offensive line, and you haven't had to worry about it for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. I think the center part, the centerpiece to this is huge. And I think the question with this offensive line is how much better are they going to be in October than they are in September? I think it's a given, Austin, that there's going to be growing pains early.
That's why Syracuse game's so big.
Yeah, I mean, there's just going to be some growing pains early. How much better do they, and how much more do they improve as the season progresses here, regardless of whether it's transfers in the interior, whether it's, you know, it's high school kids in the interior. It's a lot of new parts, and how quickly do they all blend together, and how much do they improve over the first part of the season?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, I think we all think David Sanders is uber talented. David Sanders will be a guy. But, I mean, there's going to be growth for him. The one person they need growth from in the short term is Lance Hurd. They need Lance Hurd to take his jump between now and August. You know, if he comes in and is who they, you know, hoped he would be a year ago, then it makes things a little bit easier. If he's still having to grow and learn and stuff come season, that's bad. So, like, they need him to take the big step this off season, figure out everything else, and then kind of start to build around him.
Yeah, you want to have to help to one side, not to both sides. Yes. And that's to your point. It is the you want the left side to be a guy who can anchor it, and then if you've got to help a young player and David Sanders early on, then you help him out early on is what you want to have to do. You have to, I mean, Eric, you know this. If you have to help on both sides, you got real problems offensively.
Yeah. And that's where Tennessee was at points in times, you know, this past football season for sure. Bosman 87 with a continued reporting interest in transfer interior offensive linemen. Is it safe to assume that they've whiffed on evals for guys in that room, excluding incoming freshman Nick Moore and Ogmoro from that conversation?
No, I don't think that's the case at all.
I think it's unfair to say that they whiffed there. I think the question is, are you going to put somebody out there? Are you going to put a young player out there? Which is really ironic when you think about it, because Cooper Mays was a really young player when he took over this offense, Grant. I mean, that was their only option. So they put him out there as a young player and said, you're our center. You're going to have to get physically better. You're going to have to grow and become the anchor for us. You're going to have to play some of these guys at some point. I just can't believe that you're 0-for-24 in high school recruiting in your 4 years at Tennessee. I have a hard time coming to grips that they've just missed on everybody.
Yeah. They all coaches fall in love with, let's just go get a guy in the portal that's older. Like, all coaches like to coach older guys for whatever reason. And at some point, you got to bring some younger guys along. So I don't think that they've whiffed. I think it's more just that coaches fall into the whole, I want to coach a older guy type stuff.
That's why Eric and Matt are such problems. Right, Hubs?
That's exactly
those are the young
right.
guys.
I mean, it's been hard. I mean, it's been hard out there to turn them loose on stuff, but we're getting there. I mean, both of them are getting there to where
we're coming along.
You can
coming
turn along. Them loose. I'm doing some things. So it's much better than it's been. That's for sure.
Volatile Comments says, do you think any of the freshman wide receivers will be ready to contribute this fall?
Gotta be. Yeah. You got to play them. I mean, and that's, listen, sometimes your hand gets forced. Okay. And it's not a bad thing when your hand gets forced. And kind of get you out of your comfort deal. Like, there's not going to be, you know, a two deep of veteran guys in front of them. They're going to have to play. And that's not the worst thing in the world, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens. They better be ready to play. If they can't play, then you're going to be in a four tight end set, Grant Ramey.
It's the Santiago Vescovi, Josiah Jordan James theory of it's great to have veterans and it's great to have program guys, but sometimes there's other guys that can help you win games too. And sometimes you have to have those guys out of the picture before you can put somebody else in there and see what they look like. So we'll see what they look like.
Espit Vol, how real is the possibility that Tennessee has Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Mashak back next year?
I don't know if it's a possibility at all yet. I think it depends on when this stuff goes into effect and what the date is specifically when that stuff goes into effect. I think those are two guys that they could probably make as much money here a year from now as they could make wherever their next stop is. I think the same goes to Jordan Gainey. Those are three guys that I would want back out of the four seniors that I can think of off the top of my head on the roster. Go ahead, AP.
I was just say, if the NCAA is smart, if they pass this, they'll just make it where that class gets a fifth year. Because, at the end of the day, somebody's going to sue, they're going to lose, then everybody – it's going to be like Diego Pavia all over again. Just be smart about it on the front end. Don't be morons, which, for whatever reason, they don't ever think outside the box. Put this group of seniors in, but leave it to where, these schools will have to, maneuver their roster because you're not getting any more. And it'll be like the COVID year where you got the extra, you got to figure right. it out, which means that's okay for Rick Barnes because he's got a lot of his roster set to leave anyway.
Let's go to Athron. He's got a couple of questions to ask. With all the money now going to kids, do the universities provide financial advisors for these kids so they don't end up broke like former athletes such as Adrian Peterson and Allen Iverson?
I mean, I don't know that they have a paid financial advisor on there, but I mean, they have
that class, right?
Yeah. They have guest speakers come in and those types of things. But listen, I mean, these guys and families, they've got agents and they've got, lawyers and this, that, and the other. I mean, they're doing their own thing. I mean, and some of them will handle their money the right way and do good things with it. And some of them will look up and not have money. I mean, that's the way the world works. You could educate all you want to, Grant, but people are still going to spend their money how they want to spend their money. And so I think they educate them some, but nobody's sitting down every month going through their bank bills and going, hey, you did this or you did that. That's not what's happening.
The opportunities are there is what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's up to them to take advantage of those opportunities.
UT brings Amari Jefferson home, but how long before he actually sees the field? And that's kind of tricky, obviously, coming off a minor procedure. AP believe he's going to be ready to go for spring, but obviously going to have to, make a big impression there to be on the right track to contribute in the fall. And then on the other side of it, there's not many receiver options right now, so maybe you're just there by default.
Yeah, certainly. I think it will depend on his health, how he's able to bounce back, and, what kind of player Tennessee feels like they got when he makes his way to the practice field, hopefully this spring, as he expects to be.
Any running back names from the portal, or is that looking like a potential after spring thing if they deem they need one?
I think there's a JUCO kid, maybe Northern Iowa or something like that, that Tennessee's been evaluating, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that wouldn't, if it were a spring deal, that wouldn't shock me, Austin. If we'll see who else goes in the portal, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was something that they looked at potentially post spring as well.
Thaddeus Dixon, the defensive back from Washington, put us in his top four. Anything to see here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, like I said on the board, I think unless he wants to just come and compete for a job, then, I don't see much going on there. I mean, Tennessee's just a nice logo on the graphic.
All right, we'll go to Doolittle Vol. How much do you guys expect Boo to play on offense next year?
I mean, I think I'm curious to see what they do with him in the spring. I mean, how much work does he get in the spring, Grant? What does it look like? How much can he handle workload-wise? I mean, he's certainly dynamic with the ball in his hands, so I think you can be creative with him. Is he going to play? I don't think he's going to play like Travis Hunter played at Colorado where he never comes off the field, I don't think. But, I think that's to be determined based on what all he can handle in spring practice, and then what all can they package for him?
You don't think he's going to play 200 snaps a game like Travis Hunter?
I don't
never leave the field. I thought when the talk started about this whole thing, it would be more like package based. But right now, based on receiver numbers, I think you lean on him a little bit more than maybe I had initially thought.
And he may be an answer for you in the slot, right, AP? I mean, he may be a guy who plays some slot stuff for you. But I mean, how much of it is he going to know that you do everything with him, or is he going to be more, we're going to do some things with him in the slot, but not everything with him in the slot? That depends on what Boo can handle and where his maturity is in managing all that, because that's a heavy workload mentally, not just physically.
Yeah, I agree.
Give him the Gerald Jones package, the G-gun. What's the guy's name? I think he scored at Miami in 2000, whatever year that was.
Derek Tinsley?
Derek Tinsley. There we go.
With Jefferson now in, do you expect any more wide receiver transfers? That's a given, right? Yes?
Yeah, I think so. Now, again, when does it happen, right? Is it in this window or is it in the spring window? No. That I don't think they know yet.
All right, we'll get to one more, then we'll hit a break. Let's go to this one. Did Coach Rick Barnes reach out to any potential players to enroll in the mid-year, Grant?
I think they looked for players. I think they used overseas contacts to look for possible additions to the roster. But I think it's such a it's really tough to thread that needle mid-year, bringing in somebody that can help you immediately. Santiago Vesquez was a very rare instance and a very rare position of need where they just happened to have a guy on their board that fit that profile. I don't think it's a huge pool of players that they're picking from or have options with. I think it was just a very small possibility to begin with, and I think they exhausted some of those possibilities and came up empty.
All right, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Exterior Home Solutions, for a free estimate, give them a call at 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Volunteered 87, forget what you see on message boards and Twitter, as I'd imagine those NIL assumptions are always wrong. But do you guys believe the NIL numbers you hear from other insiders, coaches, players, etc., or is everything NIL related just someone with a vested interest overinflating or downplaying the number to benefit them?
Sometimes not. I mean, sometimes it is an agent overinflating when he tells a school, well, so-and-so is going to get offer a 7. Then why did you come here for 4? You know, I mean, like, yeah, there's always some of that cat and mouse, but there's also some realness to it, Hubs. I mean, like, you know, the numbers are big and they get bigger and bigger with each passing portal cycle.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think there's some real numbers out there and there's some wrong numbers out there. You know, and because there's no database and no transparency, the challenge is trying to figure out what's real and what's not real and, you know, what decisions you want to make. Where's somebody in terms of being a priority for you? I mean, I think Austin has said it best for probably years now. I mean, your value is what somebody's willing to pay you. And in some cases, some people are overvaluing and saying that they're worth this or they need to have this and they're going to hold out. They end up not getting what they want. Or they say somebody's offering me something. They get their bluff, you know, they get their hand called on it. And in other cases, the number's real. So it just, every situation's different.
Kaner ranked from first to third as we stand a month and some change from the start of the season, UT pitching, UT hitting, UT fielding. One would be UT hitting. Two would be UT pitching. It's just going to be a lot of new guys. And then three would be UT fielding, and that's not necessarily saying they're going to be a bad fielding team. You're just breaking in a lot of new guys at different positions. I think defensively at third base with Fisher, that was a roller coaster, to say the least, at Ole Miss last year. He looked fine to me. Every inning I saw him play at the hot corner in fall, he looked fine. But that's one you might want to be paying attention to in the field. Breaking in a new first baseman, you know, what's that going to look like? We all know the roller coaster was for Burke in 2023 and how great he was a year later. Got a new middle infield, but I think Gavin Keelan's going to be just fine. And then you got two new outfielders, but I think they'll be fine fielding. But this is a prototypical Tony Vitello team. I mean, they're gonna smash the baseball and they're going to pitch the baseball really well. And there's a lot of new guys that we don't know an awful lot about right now that are going to step up and be huge on the mound for Tennessee baseball this year. Let's go to Vol through it all. With the impending ruling by the NCAA in March on a fifth year of eligibility, does it seem likely Carrick will be back next fall? Any other players that you anticipate applying that fifth year to? I know we spoke about Carrick a little while ago, but say this is in March, say this is in place for next year. Is there anybody else that could potentially benefit from this?
Football wise, I mean,
it's tough with football because I mean, again, like you're moving on. Like yeah, you're.
What's interesting with Andre's situation, and we'll see how the ruling goes into place. I mean, he's been in college 5 years now. One of those is the COVID year, so he got that year back. But is the rule that you can only be in college 5 years and you're eligible to play those 5 years, or are you going to say, okay, now we're going to do the 5 year thing and you can still have a COVID year in there? We're almost out of the COVID cycle, but not hardly out of the COVID cycle. I think how they letter and word all of that is going to be really interesting to see. Do they make it sort of cut and dry, or is there, you know, I guess asterisks to some of those things as well? I don't know how that's going to go. And I don't know when for sure they're going to make a ruling on that versus here's the ruling, here's an appeal on the ruling, and we're going to go back and forth on it.
Who do you think's higher on the priority list, Kyle McCord or Andre Kerrick?
On the priority list? I mean,
yeah, for the NCAA.
Well, I mean, Kyle McCord is the one who draws all the attention, right? I mean, and again, I mean, I think that your leaning is that everybody wins their appeal because nobody's lost an appeal.
Yep.
That's the feeling that you have right now.
Iheart Vols, to piggyback on your discussion on the Tuesday podcast, playing backups, wouldn't it be prudent both financially and from a roster management standpoint to forget about the 85 scholarship model and construct the team like a 53-man NFL roster?
Grant, give me a waiver wire and we'll talk about it. But if you don't have a waiver wire, what are you going to do? How are you going to field the team if you get a bunch of injuries, if you're at a 53-man and you can't make any in-season adjustments?
I mean, the way I interpreted the question was more like, shouldn't you be looking for maximum versatility, I guess, from these guys that you're playing, to get your money's worth, to get every penny worth? This guy can help you on X number of special teams. This guy can play X number of positions in the back, secondary, whatever, stuff like that, like trying to maximize versatility and potential the way an NFL roster maximizes and values those things.
Well, I think you're probably doing that to a degree, right? I mean, how many players are really active players on a college team?
Right.
They're not playing 85. They're not playing 80 in a game. And what's the number? Probably around 53, 55, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe.
Excluding special teams units, yeah.
Well, I mean, okay. Are you playing 20? Okay, let's if you exclude special teams unit, so you're saying they're going to play. They're playing 25 to 30 offensive players, 25 to 30 defensive players every game. I don't think they're playing that many. Tennessee as anybody in the country on
closer on defense, obviously.
Yeah, I think you're probably playing around 50, counting special teams. You're probably playing somewhere between 50 and 60 players most games. I don't think you're playing 65, 70 players in a game counting special teams. But again, the difference is, what do you do when you have a bunch of injuries? Because then if you get into some injury stuff, then you are playing deeper numbers. Whereas in the NFL, if you got an injury, you call up a guy off the practice squad, or you go get somebody off the waiver wire, you make a transaction. That's the challenge there. But I think you got to play. I think you're playing your best guys for the most part. Probably playing a few more on special teams than you would see in a regular 53-man roster. But again, where's that value at right now? If the kickers keep kicking it in the end zone every time, I mean, does it really matter who's on your kickoff coverage unit? I mean, I think you go back and look at who the 11 were on the field against Vanderbilt and that kickoff return for a touchdown. I mean, it was a bunch of – I mean, it wasn't your better players, right? I mean, it was more walk-on guys. So, I don't know. I just think it's hard to do with the injury factor out there and being unable to make roster moves during the season. That's the way I took it.
Yeah. And here's the thing too. If you're a freshman and you're a true freshman and you're burning your red shirt and you're a special teams player like Cam Seldon, the freshman year, and you know, Caleb Beasley this year, like you're playing every single special teams unit. Like you're not like you're on both coverages. You're on both returns. Like you're not just a punt return, you know, up back or whatever. Like you're doing it all.
Well, and if they, you know, if you get the 5-year deal going, red shirt goes away, and I think red shirt's going away anyway. I don't know how you get it. It's hard to get away with red shirting a guy in this day and age in the transfer portal unless he's at a true developmental position. It's really hard to do that. I mean, it's hard to sit there and go look at your budget. Okay, we paid X number of NIL, or he got X number of NIL dollars, AP, to come to school, but we're just going to let him sit and watch for the year while he's getting some money. Like, there are people who are pushing and crunching numbers that are going to be asking questions in the rev share world of, wait a minute now, this guy's getting this, why is he not playing?
That's right. More hands in the cookie jar.
Oregon Vol wants to know, is it a foregone conclusion that Satterwhite is the center in 2025? It's been mentioned Perry maybe could be an option there. Who are some other options? Max Anderson would be an option. How high is the staff on Satterwhite, and are you surprised they haven't targeted a center in the transfer portal? Austin?
I don't think it's a locked-in deal, no. We'll see if they like to bring anybody else in and, you know, where they like to play these guys. I mean, you know, do they see them, you know, if they bring in a guard, is he a guard or is he a guard center? You know, I think it'll depend on kind of how Satterwhite does in spring, how Jesse Perry does in spring, where they kind of like to play him at. Same thing with Max Anderson.
It's feels like Jesse Perry. Feels like they like Jesse Perry everywhere. They just want to find a spot for him, right? Like tackle, maybe a guard, maybe an option at center.
Like and playing are two different things.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, for sure. Rick Barnes was a blessing to the basketball program. Name another fire coach who has come to Tennessee and resurrected their career.
You can tell that question was asked before Tuesday night, right? I thought about that question. I don't have a clue. Every coach that I've been around, I haven't been around very long, has been guys on their way kind of up trajectory-wise, the coaching ladder, not aside from obviously Rick Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, nothing in recent times. I mean, that would be a fired coach that comes to mind right off the top of my head. I mean, he's certainly more the exception than the rule. And right. A lot of us, when he was hired, Grant, thought he literally was retirement Rick, right? Like, this is just he's just sliding through for a couple of years here, and he's on the twilight of his career, and he's actually come to Knoxville and been completely rejuvenated. I mean, but those are the exception, not the rule around the country.
And rejuvenated multiple times. I mean, I didn't think he was going to adapt to portal life and NIL life the way he has, and he's been killing it.
ATL VFL, going into spring, which side of the ball do you feel best about, and what needs to improve on the other side of the football?
I mean, you got to feel better about your defense, given the way they played, and you're bringing your secondary back, and you're bringing your linebackers back, and they were playing at the end of the year. I mean, and you're bringing a bunch of your defensive linebackers. So I think you got to feel better about your defense.
Too many questions on offense. What's the offensive line look like? What's the running back look like? What's the offense look like? All that stuff.
Yuri the Golden One, is Jefferson injury similar to Tyree Weathersby? And if so, can he really be counted on to do anything next year?
AP, I don't know the extent of Amari Jefferson's hip injury, how it compares to Tyree Weathersby.
To me, it was
could it be just the timing, Austin?
Yeah, it's much more minor. He had it 1st of November, and he's going to be cleared 1st of February. I mean,
and that was certainly not the case with Weathersby.
Got hurt in, you know, August.
And didn't do anything and was limited 9 months later in spring practice.
Correct.
Highly limited.
David Keith Fan, for the 2024 season, did Nico Iamaliava exceed expectations, meet expectations, or fall below expectations in your opinion?
Well, I think he's always going to fall below them.
It depends on who you ask, for sure.
I mean, when you come in and you're getting, you know, everybody's talking about the NIL deal, you are always going to, unless you led your team to the national title or an SEC title, you know, people were going to, you know, feel like it wasn't, you know, it was below expectations. Now, I mean, did he have some moments? Absolutely. And you see the promise there. But you know, he's got to take a huge step going into next year. And this is it's a contract year for Nico. It's a big year for him to take a step, you know, and take Tennessee offensively back to where they were a few years ago.
Yep, and he's got to have help around him. I mean, there's guys around him have to take real steps too. We talked about Hurd earlier. I mean, that's the whole thing for me, Grant, with this offense, is it's not about one individual. I know it starts with the quarterback, and I don't want to sound like coaching cliche. All 11 guys have to do the same, be on the same page. But the reality is there's a bunch of guys on this offense that need to take a step forward. Starts with the quarterback, but he's not the only one.
Yeah, there's a lot of not meeting expectations on the offense, which goes back to limiting your quarterback. I don't think Nico played his best football, obviously. I don't think he got a lot of help either. I think he could have had a lot more help at wide receiver. I think he could have had a lot more help on the offensive line. They could have played better and helped him meet expectations. And what AP said to start, they were sky high. They were crazy expectations. He was never going to meet those, but it's time to take a step forward, and they also need to help him take a step forward by adding pieces around him.
Non-basketball guy going to chime in on basketball here, so Grant, call me out when I'm wrong. Like basketball, one guy can just take over a game. I mean, we saw it like 20 times last year with Kinect. We've seen it with Lanier. I mean, one guy can take over a game. One guy on the mound can absolutely dominate a baseball game. In football, I mean, yeah, you can have an All-American, but like, again, not to sound like a coach, but like, I mean, you literally can't do it by yourself in football. It's just... It's the best team sport out there, in my opinion. Now I sound like a little league coach. It's the best team sport out there, and like you need guys. So, yeah, I mean, Nico's got to take a huge step, but those guys around him for sure have got to help in that regard.
Hey, when we get done, Eric's got juice boxes for everybody. Okay,
strawberry kiwi, baby. Strawberry kiwi,
orange slices and juice boxes.
Little Debbie's. You better have little Debbie's.
Dugout mom. Let's go. As Heupel does this self scout for the 2024 offense. What is one thing that you would mention to him to take a hard look at? You know, we've all talked about a number of different things, red zone efficiency offensively, penalties, lack of creativity in the playbook. Grant, I mean, anything else that you would mention to the head ball coach?
Call more touchdown plays. Call more plays where the wide receiver has nobody in their area code 40 yards down the field. Call more of those. Whatever it takes to get that self-scout started, go down that road.
For me, it's red zone, because I do think scheme factors in. I think creativity in the red zone is a must, because I think it's harder to score in there. You want to try to, you want those splash plays for touchdowns like they had in 22, but they were really good in the red zone in 2022 as well. And they have fallen off the last 2 years in the red zone big time. They're down a touchdown on average a game in red zone efficiency the last two seasons. To me, you got to be better in that end of the field, particularly as teams continue to say, we'll let you drive it 20-20, but then you're not going to score. You got to be able to finish in the red zone with touchdowns better than you have. So fix that.
Yeah, I'm with Hubs on that.
Wise Vol 24, back to Nico. The biggest excuse for Nico struggling this year was it was his first year starting and he's learning. So is it realistic for us to expect Nico to make a huge jump from year one to year two as a starter? Again, we just kind of rehashed this. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely. That's development. That's his development. That's his individual work, Grant. That's the coaching development. That's adjusting to what Nico does best. All of those things factor into that. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a great disappointment if Nico looks like the same quarterback that he was this past year. I mean, that's not getting it done.
Right, 100%. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So, time to get better.
I mean, like, same conversation with Lance Hurd again. Now, there are obviously players who have regressed before. I think there are offensive linemen that Tennessee just had that were better earlier in their career than they finished in 2024. But from year to year, especially for young players, like, absolutely. I mean, the expectation is to take a big, big leap. Crayon's got a couple here to end us off. What is the next step for this program? Stringing multiple college football playoff berths together, making it to Atlanta, winning in Atlanta, winning a college football playoff game, beating Georgia. What is the next step for this program?
Making it the multiple CFPs. I think if you're doing that, then you're putting yourself in conversation for Atlanta, and one eventually will take care of the other.
I agree with that.
Hosting a playoff game.
Yeah.
We saw what that kind of home field advantage means across all of those games in the first round. I think that could be a logical next step, because that means obviously you're making the playoff and you're doing something a little bit better to host instead of going on the road.
And I think for those things to happen that Austin Grant were talking about, I think you got to become a better road football team. You can't just be great at home and say, hey, we had another undefeated season at home. That's not good enough to be in Atlanta. That's not good enough to be in the playoffs every year the way you need to or the way you want to. You got to win games on the road.
And it's for me, it's you can't lose that game on the road that you're not expecting, that everybody is picking you to win. Like, you can go to Georgia and lose. You can go to Alabama. I can understand that. Don't lose at Arkansas. Don't go to Florida and lose when Florida's down like they did a couple years, like that kind of stuff. Win those games that you're supposed to win on the road.
What happens first, 16-team playoff or college football commissioner? If it's a commissioner, who is it? I get the easy answer is Nick Saban, but what would make him the best choice?
16 teams coming before a commissioner, in my opinion. 100%. Who the heck's gonna sign off on a commissioner? Like, who's in charge? Going, hey, this is our next guy. Like, I mean, I don't have any idea who that's gonna be or when we'll ever see that. So, 16 team, who's qualified? I mean, Nick Saban, because he's vocal and he's out of the game and he was successful. He's a GOAT. He still clearly cares about college football. Lots of people going to talk about that. But
Sankey will be a popular name.
Is everybody going to sign off on that? I mean, the Big Ten's got what they want. The SEC's got their viewpoints on things. The ACC's trying to be at the party. The Big 12. I think it's going to be really hard to find somebody that everybody can vote on and say, okay, this is our deal, because they have the best interest of everybody at heart, not the best interest of where they're from at heart.
Paul Feinbaum. I wouldn't want to do it if I was Nick, because he was too good on TV in his first year. He was too natural. I think he could have that job for the rest of his life if he wanted it, have no questions about job security. I think he got out of college football to get away from this mess. I wouldn't want to get back into it and try to solve everybody's problems, you know, all at once. I would want to stick with what I had success with and I assume had fun with in doing college game day and stuff like that.
And let's be real. He worked one day a week and he was great at it.
Right.
And he's retired. And if you're the college football commissioner, you are working like you're a head football coach. There's no time off. So, yeah, I agree with that. What current player's position on the roster has the best shot at being the next Tennessee legend? Is it Boo? Is it Nico? Could it be someone else? Brent, it can certainly be anybody, but, I mean, not all positions are weighted equally. It's quarterback. So who has the best chance to be the next Tennessee legend? It's absolutely Nico.
Well, what makes you a legend? I mean, is it splash plays? Is it flashy plays?
I think it's championships.
Is it a guy who returns a bunch of punts for a touchdown and that type thing? I mean, what makes you a legend? A legend is hoisting a trophy, in my opinion. You know, so I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, what I know is that Nico's into year three, big year for him. He's got to take a real step forward. Boo Carter's young in his career, who's going to get some more opportunities. We'll see what that looks like, and we'll see who else along the way emerges as a rising superstar in this program.
All right, that's going to do it here for today. Appreciate you guys sending in your questions on the thread there on the GQ each and every single week here for the Mailbag Podcast. Big thanks to Exterior Home Solutions for being with us and being the presenting sponsor of the show. They've been East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. They've been doing it for 25 years. That phone number is 865-524-5888, a free estimate if you call that number, or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I'm Eric Kane. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up on the General's Quarters. Basketball season in full swing, transfer portal, Tennessee recruiting, baseball season around the corner, all that and more at the General's Quarters and at BallQuest.com.
You've been listening to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on BallQuest.